So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game! It's all about the game, and how you play it, all about control, and if you can take it, all about your debt, and if you can pay it, it's all about pain,
and who's gonna make it?
I am the game, you don't wanna play me,
I am control,
no way you can shake me,
I am heavy debt,
no way you can pay me,
I am the pain,
and I know you can't take me,
look over your shoulder, ready to run, like a dreamer's face from a smoking gun,
I am the game,
and I may lose,
so move on out,
you can die like a fool,
try to figure out what my moon's gonna be,
come on over, circle, why don't you ask me?
Don't you forget there's a price you can pay,
cause I am the game and I want to play.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, yes. Welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show. It is time to play the game. That's right. We call it the game of life or the game of politics, which affects everything in your life for you people who just don't seem to get it and to get involved. Don't forget to check out our website at LouisvillePolitics.com. You're listening live right here on the EM Radio Network. Call in numbers as usual, 858-683-1326. Or 502-805-0334. Welcome, Mr. Martin. How are you, sir?
All right, Mr. Springsteen. You know, I'm not of age to be conscripted into the military, so I'm kind of thankful for that right about now. But what a mess. You know,
I'm telling
we're getting
you, man.
Right into that. What a mess.
You know, we are going to get right into Syria. I do have a couple of things I want to mention first. This is how bad it's gotten in this country. I want to point out a couple of stories before we jump into Syria, which is going to take most of the show, I'm sure. But, you know, we have an arrest of a 10-year-old girl in Houston, Texas. She was accused of raping a 4-year-old boy. Now, what has happened here is this 10-year-old girl decided she wanted to play doctor with this 4-year-old boy, and because the boy pulled his pants down and she touched his private part, you know, she's being accused of rape. You know, I'm seeing a lot of these liberals out there screaming, this girl deserves to have all kinds of bad things done to her, put on a sex offender site, she's going to grow up and be trash, she learned all this from her mom, all this negative stuff. And I am totally shocked and insulted that these clowns arrested this girl over this. And what's more shocking is she was fingerprinted and she was locked in a jail cell for 4 days for playing a doctor. Did you play doctor when you were a little kid?
You know, I don't think I did, but, you know, little boys pee on things all the time. It was probably in my neighborhood not uncommon to see any number of little boys peeing in puddles in public, you know, right on the street after a rain or something, you know. It's like, hey, it's a long way to the house.
Oh, I tell you, it's disturbing.
I could have been arrested for that, you know, making bubbles in somebody's driveway.
Right, you know. But this is a 10-year-old girl. Now, I understand the boy was 4 years old, and I understand the flip argument is, what if it was a 10-year-old boy and a 4-year-old girl? I think intent is everything. I mean, you know, they were playing doctor. You know, I've got to admit, I got caught playing doctor when I was a kid. You know, did I get in trouble? Sure I did. But, you know, it wasn't a matter of being arrested and put in a jail cell for 4 days as a child. You know, you talk about a trauma. They're trying to say this kid obviously has emotional problems and psychological problems and stuff. The problems are caused from being arrested and put in jail for 4 days. I'll guarantee you that. You know, a second story that's really bothering me here is in Gibson County, Indiana, Tri-State School District, a bus driver, a parent by the name of Amanda Wheatley, says that her son's bus driver left her son, 7-year-old Kalen, in the middle of the road, unconscious. Apparently, what happened was Caleb was on the bus on his way home. He started to cry, but he said he felt sick and overheated. When the bus driver stopped at his bus stop, Caleb's older brother helped him down the steps of the bus, and Caleb took a couple of steps, stumbled to the parking lot, and passed out, where he was unconscious for about 20 minutes. Fortunately, there were adult neighbors out there waiting for their kids to get off the bus, and they ran to his aid and called 911. But the bus driver just took off. What if there was no adult in that parking lot? You've got a 7-year-old child and a slightly older brother getting off this bus. The kid passes out before the bus driver leaves, and the bus just leaves anyway. That is very, very disturbing. Apparently, Kalen was suffering from dehydration. Looks like he's probably going to make a full recovery. But that was a very interesting story too. I mean, what's going on? We've had the bus driver who ignored the black kids being up the white kid on a school bus, refused to get involved. Now we've got a kid that's getting off the bus, passing out at the bottom of the steps, and the bus driver says no big deal and takes off. What's going on here, Ed?
You know, I don't know. Honestly, you know, I hear something like that, and the first thing I think is it's kind of like how they, you know, you see somebody in stores, they say, you know, don't follow a shoplifter out in the street. It's against protocol. Kind of wondering if there's some kind of messed up protocol on that, or if bus driver, you know, one way or the other, if there is, protocol needs to be changed. If there's, you know, I'm guessing it's very possible the protocol is you don't leave, and one way or the other, something has changed. You know, that bus driver needs to lose his job, or you know, if he was following protocol, then he needs to. Then somebody needs to, you know, get real about it. You know, it's like, come on, guys. You know, liability lawyers or whatever. If that's what if that's what's driving it, you can't. Bus driver can't leave the bus. Whatever. It's like, look, you've got to build some flexibility in there. These are kids. Sometimes it's really hot. Sometimes it's really cold. Sometimes they just get really sick really quick. You know, you can't be a total jerk about it.
And I agree. And what's really fascinating, too, is the North Gibbs superintendent, Dr. Brian Harmon, went on a record to say that the buses are safe, says he can't say much about this because of privacy laws. But then he goes on, he admits that something happened, in his words, and the school is currently investigating. But he couldn't stop there. He kept on going and says, you know, I want people to know that sometimes initial incident reports are not completely accurate. Because parents can say anything they want to because they're not bound by any privacy laws. To me, it was about as callous a response as you could possibly make in regards to an intense situation where this boy's life was in jeopardy. I was very disturbed by the way that this superintendent handled this, and I would hope that the people in North Gibson would take care of that. And finally, one more story I've got to touch on before we start really getting into the meat and potatoes tonight, if you will. You know, JCPS, Jefferson County Public Schools, we've got principals from at least 7 different high schools, Ballard, DuPont, Manual, Fairdale, Iroquois Southern, Wagner, and Valley High Schools are going to meet with Jefferson County Public School Board on Monday because they want to be exempted from the JCPS ban on cell phones in schools. They think that they should be allowed to have cell phones in their schools, and they're going on to record at these principals of these schools. And this is the stupidity of these daggone idiots in public teaching and everything else today. But these principals are going to record saying that they need those cell phones for instructional use, that they actually use these phones in the classroom to help with their instruction. And what's really fascinating is, you know, they're making the argument. I mean, it's bad enough that they think that we're that stupid that we're going to fall for that. They're making the argument that these kids, that the kids use this, they should be allowed to use their cell phones as a learning tool, not only in the classroom, but at lunch, at any organizational functions, for any research purposes, essentially anything they want. So they want these kids to be able to have these cell phones in school to text back and forth with their buddies instead of doing their work, because that's exactly what this is. And I can't believe these principals are stupid enough to do this and try to fight for this. And I've actually got to go on record, because it looks like Carol Haddad, one of the people that I really hate on the JCPS, and that's not a light word that I use very lightly, you know, she's actually sitting here laughing. She doesn't want it. And, you know, so congratulations to Carol Haddad. You finally found common ground with me, because I think this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. I mean, what could you possibly use a cell phone for in the middle of a lunch for instructional?
Honestly, I think if they're at lunch, let them look at their cell phones. The lunchroom would get real quiet. You know, all the kids would have their heads down and be texting. So, you know, maybe not a bad thing at lunch, but oh, these principals, it's like, really? You're surrounded by thousands of kids, you know, year in and year out, and you honestly think that if you let them have cell phones in the class that, first and foremost, that they're going to try to read educational text on that little 3-inch screen, okay, that's your first mistake. Secondly, right, you think these kids are going to, you know, they're not going to be on social media. Well, okay, I got news for you there. And then third, if you don't think some of the kids are going to get crafty about it, you know, and put their phone on silent and, you know, push that little button and go, and take a picture of the test and send it to their buddies who's going to have that class the next period, it's like, get the grip, you know?
I'm trying to understand how anybody
whizzing through Google or looking for answers or something or going to answers.com. I mean, come on. Yeah, really? No.
Well, see, there you go. That's exactly what happened to good classroom instruction and involvement. I mean, these kids, if a teacher has to rely on a cell phone for kids to go to Google to look up an answer to something, then they're clearly not doing their job teaching the subject. I mean, for me, this is just one more example of what's wrong with some of these public schools and the administration. These principals should be ashamed of themselves for even thinking about this. If they would do their damn job and do classroom instruction, we wouldn't have this problem.
And, you know, and something else you're not thinking about, too, is, of course, when you're on a cell phone, however many megabytes of data you download, you know, sometimes you run over your limit stuff and you get charged. So basically, if you want to take them at their word, they're basically taking some kid's family plan or, you know, or their plan or whatever, and the school system wants to be subsidized by the megabytes that you load down, if you believe it. And then beyond that, you know, how about, you know, obviously into this equitable stuff. What if you got a kid that's got an old iPhone 4, you know, like me? I'm so embarrassed.
Well, what about this? What about this possibility?
I've got a 4, you know, this thing is amazing and still alive. What if you got somebody that's got 4G and you got some kid limping along with 3G or something like that?
Well, you know, it's really interesting here,
yeah,
too,
that,
Ben,
that,
because
they basically stacked the deck for some of the kids that got the hot phones and the hot service and stuff. They're gonna run circles around the poor kids that are, you know, that are limping along with a pay-as-you-go plan or something like that.
Well, I've got to be honest with you. I've got Sprint. I've got a Sprint business plan, and I've got unlimited everything. I could talk, text, go on the internet, do whatever the hell I want to, unlimited. It's one cost package.
I am,
because I tell you, you know, a lot of people sit there and make all these things about these other carriers. But Sprint has an unlimited plan that just is hard to beat. And I've been with Sprint since 1995, so I've been with them a long time now. But, you know, the thing is, for me, that cost wouldn't be a factor. But when you get into AT&T, when you get into Verizon, T-Mobile, and all these other ones, they do have those data plans. You know, so here's what I'm wondering, too. I'm wondering if these seven schools are going to make some kind of arrangement with cell phone providers that they get a kickback on any kind of overage that these kids go through. Then they start relying more and more on the kids using the cell phones. They're going over their daggone allowed usage, and they start getting a kickback on that, and it becomes another way to raise money for school. Now, that's pathetic. But can it go there? Oh, I think it can quite easily. So that's something that I'm really concerned with, too. And, you know, finally, you know, I kind of want to stay with education for just a second because I really want to get into Syria. This is going to be a great discussion. But, you know, Eric Holder has showed his ass once again. It's pretty interesting that we're sitting here trying to honor the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech. And Eric Holder and his Justice Department just sued to block the education federal voucher system in Louisiana. Late last week, Eric Holder's Justice Department asked a federal court to stop 34 school districts in Louisiana from handing out any private school vouchers so the kids can choose what school they're going to go to and get out of these failing public schools. Now, what's really interesting here is Holder wants to sit here and act like he cares about these kids and stuff. And his lawyers are claiming that this is their line of reasoning, that the voucher program is impeding the desegregation process required under federal law. That has got to be the biggest joke there is, because quite frankly, in 2012, last year, Louisiana came up with this guaranteed voucher to students from families with incomes below 250% of the poverty level and who attend schools that are graded C or below. So they're stuck in these bad schools. Poor kids stuck in bad schools. This is thanks to forced segregation. So now you've got a situation where Louisiana is trying to do the right thing. They're trying to get these kids a better education. They're allowing them to use these vouchers. Their parents get to choose where their kids are going to go to school, whether it's private, religious, whatever. You know. And, oh, by the way, 90% of the beneficiaries of this voucher program are black. So just exactly what is Eric Holder trying to prove here by doing this, suing Louisiana school districts to keep 90% of black kids from getting a better education? Is he a complete idiot? Hello, Ed.
Hey, what you
Ed.
Got?
There we go.
Yeah. When you end up with is he's a complete racist. He's basically one of these people who says, apparently thinks to himself, well, if you've got a bunch of, you know, if you have an all-black school, it must not be as good as the white. But even if they want to be there, even if there's parental involvement, even if it's voucher-fed, maybe you know, voucher-funded, and it's what the people want and they're committed to it, which is, you know, you always hear parental commitment is one of the most important things. All those things aside, it's basically saying if there's too many black kids in a school, it can't be a good school.
Well, yeah, you know, but the thing is,
I think they're calling bullshit on that and saying, you know what, if we can get the school we want, it doesn't matter what your ratios are or something. We want to put our kids in a school that excels, and if it's out of whack with one of your silly federal numbers, then so be it. It's in whack. As far as parental involvement and stuff goes, and that's what's key anyway.
Well, for me, the real problem here is daggone teachers' use. I've got to be honest with you, because here Eric Holder, who is proving to be the most racist, him and Barack Obama have proven to be the most racist leadership team in history, in my opinion. Okay, they really have, and you know, in the 21st century, these guys are the ones who are playing all the racist cards. And here Eric Holder has, at Louisiana, 90% of the beneficiaries of this voucher program are black minority students, and they're being given an opportunity to get a better education and break the cycle of poverty that they have in these school districts, And Eric Holder is saying,
oh, no,
we can't do that. You know, it's just another example of how black leadership, in my opinion, is holding back black potential. I mean, here Eric Holder is telling 90% of the black students, we don't want you to get ahead. We don't want you to get a better education. We don't want you to be in a position where you can someday become attorney general or even president of the United States. We want to hold you back. And this, to me, really truthfully, really comes back to the teachers' unions, because the teachers' unions are scared to death of this, because if you get vouchers of students and they get out of public schools and go to private or religious schools for the same money and get a better education, you're going to see a hell of a lot of public teachers losing their jobs, and these unions are going to become very, very scared. So to me, this is nothing more than a quick attempt to try to keep the teachers' unions happy and to screw the black daggone students in the process, and I think it's atrocious that it's really gotten to that point.
I think there's some definite truth to that. I mean, I doubt the vouchers they get will be enough to send a kid full on to a private school, but you know, it might give a family enough of a bump to where, you know, if a parent works a little extra, they could probably pull it off. And I agree. I think that's what they're afraid of. I think they're afraid of losing control. I think in some cases, failing school, damn sure should be afraid of losing enough students where they get shut down. And you know, then if you're associated with that school, you know, you're a failing program. Everybody now, you can't cover it up with prepping kids for tests. You can't cover it up by having some kids not take standardized tests like the ACT, you know, keep the dumb kids from taking the test so overall average goes up. I think you're absolutely right. And it amazes me the fights that they choose. They want this fight? Really? I mean, come on. Can we look
Thank you.
The parents want it. The kids want it. The union
Thank
doesn't
you.
Want
this,
it.
This is,
you
know, this is a win. This is a win. For the people. And once again, Eric Holder and his Justice Department are doing everything they can to screw we the people, and he's doing it with Barack Obama's blessing, or he wouldn't be in that job. So it's very, very disturbing to me that we've got to have that, and you're right, this is a wrong fight. One more quick thing, we're going to take a break right after that, Ed, jump right into Syria. But we've got some problems with the Department of Homeland Security. I don't know if you've heard of the name Ayo Kamathi, but Ayo Kamathi is a black, and I have to use the word black because he is. He's an acquisitions officer for Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. He also runs a website, a violent website, that talks about racist, violent, warmongering, homophobic, and anti-Obama rant. He just now was put on administrative paid leave. Why we're paying this racist is beyond me, but this guy was in charge of buying weapons and ammunition for the government. Now, we've been talking a lot lately about how the government has been really overreaching and buying up so much ammo and weapons and everything else. We don't know why. This guy is part of that problem, in my opinion. He's got his website. It's a hate-filled website, folks. I've got to tell you that. I hate to even mention the website on the air because I don't want to give this claim any credibility because he makes the KKK look like amateurs, except he's black going against white instead of the other way around. But his website is called War on the Horizon. His website promises an unavoidable, inevitable clash with the white race. He continues to talk about killing whites and everything else. It's very disturbing. But this guy is working with Homeland Security. One example of one of his statements on his website, he says that in order for black people to survive the 21st century, we're going to have to kill a lot of whites, more than our Christian hearts can possibly count. And this guy is in charge of buying weapons and ammunition for ICE. Thoughts? Well, Ed, you cut out, man. There you are. What now?
I think it's a shame. You know, you think about this guy. He's paid administrative leave. And you think of, you know, there's always those stories floating around about some kid making a joke or something on media and the cops coming and arresting them and or playing doctor and, you know, spending days in jail at the age of 10, and this guy's full on has access to lots of firepower. He's in a position of authority. You know, he can grab your junk whenever he wants, I guess. But if he goes off and off the deep end and repeatedly goes this direction, what does he get? Paid administrative leave.
Well, that's it. Okay. I mean, if I ran, if my website.
There's definitely a double standard at play, I'll tell you that.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, if my website went out there and put out all of this stuff, I mean, let's just change a couple of words here. In order for white people to survive the 21st century, we're going to have to kill a lot of blacks. If I had a website that promoted that language and I worked for the U.S. government, I would be labeled a terrorist, I would be fired immediately, and I would be under surveillance for a long, long time. I would be in some deep shit. And this guy gets paid administrative leave just because he happens to be black, and everybody is scared to hold the black community accountable for what they do and what they say. And that's the tragedy of the whole thing. Let's take a quick break here. When we get back, we are going to get into Syria. This is very disturbing what's going on there. The lies and propaganda coming from the U.S. administration and the fact that we're willing to violate the Constitution should bring some serious alarm bells to everybody. We'll get into that discussion when we get back. Listen to the Ed Spencer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned. So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
politics.com, and we want to hear from you. Don't forget, the number is 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334. And for you guys in the listening queue, do not forget to press that little number 1 on your dial pad if you want to be heard on air. And I want to thank you, because we always have a couple of dozen people in the queue that call in and listen. you know, listen to the show live. And, you know, that's a pretty good testament to what we do, Ed, because, you know, I mean, hell, most of these guys are probably at work or something. That's why they listen on their phone. And that just goes to show you what kind of reach we have. So I'm very thankful for all of them. you know, Ed, I'm going to read a quote to you, and I'll tell you why I'm going to read this. Here's a quote for you, and I want you to tell me who said this. The founding fathers were, as in most things, profoundly right. That's why I want to be very clear. If the president takes us to war without congressional approval, I will call for his impeachment. The Constitution is clear, and so am I. Who's that quote from?
I'm thinking Rand Paul.
Actually, it's not. The quote was from Joe Biden in 2007.
Oh, this must have been back in the Bush days then.
It was. It going into Bush's
all
right. Year.
Joe Biden
2007.
Well, I tell you what, I wasn't even standing on the right side of the plate to take that pitch.
I figured I said,
damn.
You know, and the reason that's important is this. Joe Biden is Vice President of the United States, and our administration, Barack Obama and clowns, are going to go to Syria and start bombing Syria within days. And they're going to do that without the UN Security Council meeting and giving them blessing. Now, we know that the UN military is nothing more than the United States. We use them as a front for our aggression everywhere. But now we're just going to bypass the UN altogether. According to Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel, U.S. forces are in the region right now, ready to go, and they plan to punish Assad, President Bashar al-Assad, for a major poison gas attack last week that killed hundreds of civilians. Now, Ed, here's the thing. When we went into Iraq to take out Saddam Hussein, we were fed intelligence that said that there was no WMDs there. Now, they lied and said they had all kinds of weapons of mass destruction and all the other stuff, chemical missiles and everything else. But when we went in there, we found nothing. So the whole world for several years now has been chastising George Bush and Colin Powell for being the face at the UN. And they were saying that Iraq had taken those chemical weapons across the border and gave them to Syria. Nobody wanted to believe that. Well, now Syria has used chemical weapons and killed hundreds of civilians. Who's right and who's wrong here?
Well, you know, I don't know. I'm trusting that at some point they'll be able to connect the dots. I don't know if they'll ever tell us, you know, whether they can. I'm sure they have samples from when Saddam Hussein used chemical weapons on people in the Iran-Iraq war and on his own people, the Kurds. Mm. I'm sure they've got samples of what that was, and maybe it is, maybe it isn't the same stuff that supposedly was used now. I mean, will we ever get the full story? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that would rather we not find out it's the same stuff, because then everybody's going to go, oh, okay. So that's what happened to them. That's why we couldn't find them in Iraq, because they were somewhere else. So, yeah, I mean, that remains to be seen. But and like I said, I don't think we'll know. I think the last thing in the world a lot of people want is to find out that they were in Iran or Iraq, and they got eased on out of Iraq before everybody got there, because, of course, tactically speaking, George Bush beat that drum long enough that it's like, you know, it's like, hey, we're coming in. You've got weapons of mass destruction. It's like, okay, when are you coming in? In about 2 weeks. You know, it's like, okay, this is like, hey, move that stuff. You know?
Well, you know, and see, that brings me to the next thing, though, Ed. Right now, I mean, we've all told Syria we're coming. We've told them we're coming. We told them to expect us within the next several days. I mean, when you're going to attack somebody, you need that element of surprise. We continually tell our enemies when we're coming. Why is that? Why do we do something like this?
I tell you what, it makes you look back and you. Reagan for shooting a hole through Gaddafi's tent, completely unexpected, and hitting his airfields with cluster bombs out of the blue. I mean, you expect that to a degree, and you've got to appreciate it, because here we are. We're doing it again, and tactically, I just don't know. You sit back and you tell somebody, you know, oh, well, if you use, you know, first off, you tell them, well, if you use chemical weapons, that's a red line, and And damn it, we're going to do something if you use chemical weapons. So first thing is somebody that wants you involved in the war is going to find a way to make chemical weapons go off, you know. So it's like, there's the red line. If you're, basically the most powerful country in the world, and we're telling everybody, hey, if you want to jerk our chain, this is how you do it.
Well, so, I'm kind of curious too, and I'm kind of curious.
I don't know the exact date they use them. So now we're sitting here beating the war drums, moving ships into place, very publicly talking to people, and like the Brits and the French and the Turkish and everybody saying, okay, you know, let's get all our everything lined up before we lob a few cruise missiles in there or whatever we're going to do. You know, if you're Assad, it's. To me, this is kind of like Hurricane Katrina. It sat out in the Gulf for 4 days, and people didn't get the hell out of the way. I mean, you got to think Assad is going, okay, they're probably going to try to hit our control commander. So let's get some backups in place. And they're probably going to try to hit, you know, this, that, the other. So let's spread that out so they can't take it all out at once, you know. And somebody says, oh, when's the attack coming? He says, oh, hell. A week. My God.
Yeah, 7 days or less.
This is like Jack Conway tipping his brother off to, hey, the cops are going to come search your house to grub, you know? Like,
well,
really?
Jack Conway. I was wondering how you were going to pull that one off, tie Jack Conway into this, because I can't stand Jack Conway, so that works out.
I did it flawlessly, did I not?
You did very, very well. Let's go to the phones. Mayo, what's going on, man?
Oh, not much. I'm just kind of curious. You keep up with it more than I do. I just usually get most of my news from the BBC because at least it's honest. But here they have people on the ground, and, you know, they're reporting that, you know, doctors who went in to help died afterwards or had, you know, respiratory duress, got sick, et cetera. So, you know, how is one radio, you know, they're saying, you know, oh, if there's evidence of a chemical attack, I'm going, what do you mean evidence? it's there.
Well, they're now saying that these chemical weapons have killed and injured more people than Saddam Hussein did. But what's really, really interesting here too, though, is, you know, with Saddam Hussein, we knew for sure that he's the one that employed chemical weapons. As a matter of fact, I've got a brother-in-law who served in Operation Desert Storm, the first one. And, you know, everybody comes back now. They've got the Gulf War disease. He's one of them that suffers from that. And it's because of the biological and chemical weapons that were used. He suffers from that. He's got some serious medical problems that he'll deal with the rest of the
week. We knew more than that about Saddam Hussein. I'll send you an article I found today. There have been some declassified documents. We knew what he was using. We knew when he was going to use it in the Iran-Iraq war. We kind of taught him a little bit of how to do it. So we damn sure knew he had him.
Well, also, I mean, here's – go ahead, Bill.
Well, I was just going to say, and the second thing is, I mean, yes, it's a sad thing. You know, people have been hurt, killed, et cetera. But the thing is, the United States is not the world's police force. That's why they're, you know, NATO was created, the United Nations, et cetera. And if somebody's going to go in, it should be all of these nations in agreement supplying troops, et cetera. Or if they're not going to supply boots on the ground, then they need to pay the U.S. government for us to go over there and for putting the boots on the ground and for putting, you know, our young men and women's lives in danger. You know, there's
But I agree with that because that's always been one of the points of contention for me and quite a few people, including yourself. You know, the United Nations uses us as the world's police force. And quite frankly, most of the time we're used as the world's police force is because we want to go there anyway. The United Nations is just greenlighting our objectives. I don't have a doubt in my mind about that. But in this particular case, one of the reasons they want to bypass the UN and immediately go ahead and start attacking without UN approval is because of Russia and China. Russia is going to veto any attack. They've already said that. So you're going to have, you know, Russia is one of the few that have veto powers on anything. They're going to employ their veto power on this. China and Russia have both said the United States needs to stay the hell out of there. And, you know, Barack Obama wants to go ahead and do it anyway. So that's the problem. But here's the thing, guys. Here's another thing we're not looking at. Because John Kerry, who's a joke as far as I'm concerned, but Secretary of State John Kerry is the one he's accusing Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, his regime, that they are the ones who are using the chemical weapons. They're the ones who are deploying sarin and mustard gas. The problem is that we have proof, and there's even YouTube videos, if you guys want to go and look at them, there's even YouTube videos that show that it's not the Al-Assad regime that has used these chemical weapons, that indeed it is the rebels that have used these chemical weapons. So we're trying to make a case for war, or a case for attack against the Bashar al-Assad regime based on evidence that clears his regime of wrongdoing, because we don't want to hold the rebels responsible. Does that change the argument?
Well, either claim has to be validated, and I don't think we've had time to do it yet. Yet we got Biden out there saying it, and Kerry saying it. There's no doubt. It's like, really? Okay. We were just hearing about the getting sniped at yesterday, wasn't it? So have they already concluded their investigation? They already done whatever, you know, DNA or whatever testing they have to do on the nerve agent to figure out where it came from? Because it's obvious, you know, when you think of the Falun Gong people that put sarin gas on the Japanese subways and stuff, there have been terrorist groups, you know, you have ricin every once in a while shows up. There are people capable of doing this. So let's find out what it is. Let's find out if it's military grade or if it's just something somebody put together and hurried out into the street and shot out into the street, or, you know, sprayed or whatever, in an effort to get us into a war, because we told everybody that's how you get us into a war.
Well, I just went ahead and put a link into the chat room. It's got an embedded video that's showing the rebels loading up a chemical weapon that they shot into a Syrian village. And what's interesting here, too, is because Assad is saying his government has not used chemical weapons, that this is nothing more than politics, according to the LA Times. And I tell you, honestly, you know, he goes on to and tells the whole world that he had his own Syrian forces in the area that was targeted. And he asked the question, how is it possible that any country would use chemical weapons or any weapon of mass destruction in an area where its own forces are located, as part of his rant. Now, you know, that statement by Assad really doesn't impress me much. We continue to hear those kind of lies and misstatements from our own government here, so I don't expect a government leader to tell us the truth in that situation. However,
I have to ask the question. I mean, he's probably a pretty low-life character, and he's probably pretty ruthless, but I don't think he's stupid. So once again, if we're broadcasting to the world that we're going to come over there and kick somebody's ass if they used chemical weapons, then one has to ask the question, why would he use chemical weapons and have us, you know, no doubt, come over and try to knock down a bunch of his stuff and blow a bunch of his stuff up? Why would he do it? I mean, maybe he's crazy.
That's not hard to figure, though, Ed.
But to me, that's one that's like, look, Assad can think, look, we can drop fuel air bombs, we can shell the crap out of people, we can run over people, we can do all sorts of stuff.
And then when it's all said and done,
but if they find chemical weapons, they're going to blow a bunch of our stuff up from way away, way far away, with Tomahawk missiles. Why would he do it? I mean, I'm not defending the guy, but the logic is beyond me. Why, if there's one trigger to get us to come over and kick his ass, that's it. Why would he do it?
Money. I mean, it all comes down to money. I mean, you think about this. Why would he do it? We go into Iraq, and how many billions of dollars are we spending in Iraq rebuilding Iraq? It's creating jobs. It's creating opportunity. It's creating a way of life. It's the same thing in Afghanistan. And
yeah,
it's going to be the same thing in Syria.
After we hung their ex-leader.
Sure. We don't care. We don't care. We have no way to care. You know, and it's interesting to me because even Russia is heavily involved in this whole situation. Now, understanding they're backing the Syrian government and we're backing the rebels, which is how we always do that. People misunderstand it. They don't really pay attention. But that's exactly what happens. You take a superpower like Russia and a superpower like the U.S., we pick a third world country, and we go ahead and have one of us backs the government, the other one backs the rebels, and we fight our battles there so that we don't have to fight them on our own soil. And that's exactly what's going on in the Middle East, and has been going on for quite some time. This is a Russia and U.S. trying to control the world. But even Russia, on the Russian Arabic language channel, RT Arabic, They've got video coverage. They're showing clear captured rebel arsenals that have the chemical agents and everything else that are manufactured in Saudi Arabia and gas masks. They're taking all of this stuff from the rebels. The rebels have this stuff. So we're sitting here trying to paint the world picture that we need to take out Assad because he's the one that's deploying chemical weapons. We have, you know, proof that the rebels are the ones deploying chemical weapons. Who's right? Who's wrong? I'm like you. We need a hell of a lot more time to put this together because this is just makes no sense to me. And instead of going down that road, you know, let's get into this too, because how does America feel about this? How does America feel about this? Well, recent polling on different research here says that Americans are largely opposed to military action. And very few are paying very close attention to this conflict in Syria. So if we look at this, very few are paying attention, but the ones who are largely opposed. You've got 70% of Americans told the Pew Research Center, and this was in June, that they oppose sending any arms or military supply to the anti-government groups or rebels in Syria. This poll was conducted right around at the same time that Obama said we were going to provide military aid to the Syrian rebels. And NBC News Wall Street Journal showed that two-thirds of Americans preferred that the U.S. provide only humanitarian assistance or take no action. A Gallup survey, 68% thought the U.S. should not intervene militarily to end the conflict. They should say they should go after economic and diplomatic efforts. So here we've got all of this going on. Very few that we have any responsibility to intervene in Syria. Okay, only 28% of people, according to the CBS News New York Times poll, thought we had a responsibility to go into Syria. 61% said we don't, with the rest undecided. So this is clearly something that nobody in America wants. I mean, we're the ones that are losing lives. We are the major ground force in any war that's going on around the world today. And we're losing our lives. Our young sons and daughters are being killed over politics at a place that we have no business being. Why is it that we continue thinking that we have to get involved in the world's issues, Ed?
I've been pondering it for a while. I think our administration they're rudderless. I don't think they have a clue. They wake up every morning and try to figure out what happens today, you know, that memory of a goldfish thing. But, you know, I look at it and think between Kerry and Biden and Obama, that they are so sorely overmatched in the world of international diplomacy. It is embarrassing. And you look at the tangled web of alliances, you know, who hates who, you know, who's friendly with what government but not friendly with the predominant religion in a country. That place is so intertwined, you can't untangle it. You got to think we're still in Afghanistan, and that's going to fall apart if we ever pull out completely. And, you know, it's still a pile of rocks, and that's about it. We're in Iraq. It's always somebody blowing something up all the time, so it's a the country's still in shambles, and as soon as we leave, we're going to get anarchy is going to set in. The crazies are going to come in. Take your pick. And now we've been sniping at Iran for a while, although they seem to have moderated a little bit. You got the Saudis who are over there seemingly pulling strings all over the place. You've got the Turks who we've had some flare-ups with. You've got the Pakistan. You just look at the mess that it is over there. And somebody just had, then you got the Russians who are backing the Syrians and the Chinese who are kind of looking at the whole mess going, go on, spend all your money on a war, whatever.
But let's look at reality.
After you do all this stuff and build all this infrastructure, we'll slide on in and use some of your American dollars that we've got to buy the oil from whomever once you get the refineries rebuilt. Thanks. I look at the whole just a mess, and the fact that we're in, and it's like you're stuck in the mud. And we just keep moving forward, getting into deeper mud. It's like, God, at some point, back out. We won't think less of a man or something. Just back the hell out. And one other theory that I've hatched is, you know, I know we talk off air that this could be World War III. I don't think so. I think it's all economic. I think if Russia would get a chuckle out of us going in and fighting a proxy war, because we're sure I'm not going to tell the, you know, we're in no position to tell them not to ship stuff to the Syrians. So, you know, I think they'd kind of get a kick out of a proxy war. I think they'd like to see the area a little more disrupted because Russia is a major gas and oil exporter. They would love nothing more than for Americans like you and I to wake up one morning and see that gas is 30 cents more a gallon. You know,
no, you mean like
they,
this
they're
week?
Make a fortune. They're gonna sell stuff to Assad, and they're going to make a fortune off the gas and oil prices if the region flares up and they get their price because, you know, they're secure. And,
well, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. That's already going on. We know that. Gas went up 30 cents overnight, night before yesterday, because they were worried about this. And that's the way it works. The rich get richer, the poor get poorer, and they use the crap for economic gains. But, you know, it's really interesting to me because, you know, when I say that this may be a catalyst of World War III, I'm not joking about that. You know, and I hope that I'm wrong. But, you know, there comes a point in time where arrogance and ego overinflates, you know, your value. And we are at that point in time as a nation. There have been two presidents in my lifetime, or right around my lifetime, that I believe knew how to handle foreign relations and play the game right and keep the peace. One of them was a Democrat by the name of John F. Kennedy. The Cuban Missile Crisis was a great testament to having nerves of steel and understanding what you were dealing with. And the other one was President Ronald Reagan, a Republican. So we've had a Democrat president, we've had a Republican president who, in my opinion, knew how to handle foreign affairs, had a great foreign policy agenda, and they weren't too proud to either back down or put your boot in some asses, if you will, if it became necessary. All right. John F. Kennedy, of course, was assassinated largely in part to the Cuban Missile Crisis. I firmly believe that. I'm not one of these people who believe that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I firmly believe that Lyndon Baines Johnson and our own CIA were involved in that. Call me a conspiracy theorist if you will. But the military was pissed because he wouldn't let them do what they wanted to do. And then, you know, Ronald Reagan, of course, I mean, let's face it, the Great Wall, you know, the things going on where Russia fell apart. I mean, everything Ronald Reagan did diplomatically and behind the scenes is an incredible testament to how you get things done in this world without killing each other. And those two guys are really two of the best in history as far as I'm concerned. So why are we at this point where we've got a loose cannon who knows absolutely nothing about military whatsoever, and that includes his Secretary of State, Mr. Swiftboat John Kerry, are out here trying to force a war that we don't need? Why are we still in Iraq? Why are we still in Afghanistan? Why are we looking to go to Syria? How can we continue fighting these wars overseas and leaving our back doors wide open right here in America? That's what makes it easy for Russia and China. That's why I see World War III on the horizon.
I don't think it's a backdoor thing. I think that anybody who wants to take us down economically, they've looked, they've seen what these other wars have cost us, and they're just looking at us like, go on, fool, if you want to stick your finger in the fan again, go right ahead and do it. And you know, you're using up your military superpower status. You're using up your economic superpower status, and yeah, making it easy for them. It really is. And I think it's going to be more economic. I think they just look at it and whatever. And if things start going poorly, I actually was looking at some articles today. You know, Russia has the oil and gas off Europe before. They will play that hand, and Putin's back in charge, so you know they'll play that hand. This alliance, you know, I've speculated some as to whether this alliance, if Russia really doesn't like it, they can slow the flow of gas and oil to most of Western Europe. So they don't ever have to fire a shot. It's like, guys, they got you by the short hair. Because they'll you know, when winter gets here, it might get real cold. So, yeah, they may cut the supply and just decide they want to profit a little more on the front end. So, you know, I think this is so complicated, and I just think they're up against. I think our government, the people that were we've got in D.C. are severely overmatched.
Wild Thursday adapter is severely overmatched.
At some point, if Hillary's reading the white sheet, and if that's why she didn't just say, hey, you know, John Kerry, he'd be pretty good at this job, you know, which is a polite way of saying, I'm getting the hell out of here before the rubber hits the road.
Hillary had to get out because she's going down for Benghazi and everything else that she did wrong. There's so much evidence out there that Hillary Clinton is guilty of war crimes, in my opinion, that, you know, she had to get out to preserve any shot she had in 2016 for the presidency. That's the game. You know, it's strange to me that we are continuing to follow these leaders who have no clue. Barack Obama has never been nothing more than a street organizer. When you're a Democrat in a Democratic town, Chicago, and you're tied up with terrorists like Bill Ayers and Frank Marshall Davis, communists, you know, it is or isn't your dad, depending on which conspiracy theory you want to listen to, and you're dealing in a Democratic area like Chicago where it's pay-as-you-play, as he did with Blagojevich and everybody else, you know, he doesn't know the first thing about running anything. He knows how to run the scam. That's it. And that's why they're overmatched. And John Kerry is the same way. The only thing these people care about is getting reelected. They don't have a clue how to do the job that they're entrusted with, and it's very, very disturbing. Ed, we're down to our last couple of minutes, man. Final thoughts, my friend.
Final thoughts. You know, like I say, it's a super complicated. You know, you and I, of course, we're nerds, so we'll pour over this. We won't be able to untangle this. But you know, I just look at because of the complexity of the issue and, you know, and what a tinderbox it is. Let me say, it unnerves me more every day that I kind of watch our guys go through rudderless, you know, and now they're claiming, you know, they want a war. I mean, it's pretty damned obvious. There's a guy who came in and was, you know, I'm going to finish winding down here and here. It's like, well, you're winding it the hell up here. You know, he wants a war. I mean, he's not trying to tiptoe around it. He's putting people out there that are going for it. So, hey, if you voted for him, understand this. He wants a war. For what reason? I don't know. I think he's being played by people who are a little bit, they're a few moves ahead of him on the chess table. Somebody like Putin. And it scares the hell out of me. You know, and again, I don't think we're headed for a big conflict because you've got to ask yourself at some point, what's in it for Russia? What's in it for China? What's in it for anybody? I mean, they want to make money. And I think a slow burn war is kind of what they want. It weakens us. It weakens our resolve. And it's in a region that all you need is a few things to blow up, and the price of oil goes up, and the ruble is strong as hell because, you know, and there's money flowing into Russia. They can build anything they want. They can ramp up their military, build skyscrapers, you know, I think that's where it's at. I think this is just a setup for us to get worn down economically and spiritually. I think it's just, you know, it's like, hey, the American people are tired as hell. The polls show that. Let's corner this amateur of a president into going in. He said there's a red line. Let's corner him. Let's send him to war one more time. They'll lose faith in their government. They'll lose faith in their economy. They'll run themselves into the rocks, and we won't have to do a damn thing.
Well, I think you're right. And as far as my final thoughts are concerned, you know, I keep being reminded of Joe Biden speaking of war in 2007 when he goes on to talk about how the founding fathers were right in most things and that if the president takes us to war without congressional approval, he will call for his impeachment because the Constitution is clear and so is he. Here's the test for me. I personally believe we have enough crimes against Barack Obama to impeach him today. I know that the House of Representatives would love nothing more than to impeach Barack Obama, and they have the votes to do so. Unfortunately, with a Democratic-controlled Senate, they will not do their job because of politics, and that's what creates the situation that we're in, politics. When we can, if this president goes to war and goes to Syria and starts bombing Syria without going through the UN Council first and everything else and getting approval from them, then it is past time to impeach him. There's no doubt in my mind about that. When we're going to start fighting people on yet another war and we're going to jeopardize American lives yet once again, I am very concerned with that. It's built on something that we're not 100% sure of. We have lost way too many soldiers. We have lost way too many daggone Americans due to war, not counting civilian casualties, people in these other nations that we're going to fight in. Hundreds of thousands of civilians, innocent civilians, have been killed because of our over-aggressiveness. And, you know, I'm a guy that believes in the military. I'm a guy that believes in defending freedom. I am a veteran. I've got no problem going to war if it's necessary. But I, as a veteran, as a guy, maybe it's because I'm getting older, I don't know. But I will say this. The time for us to just randomly continue going down this path of destruction and over-aggression in third world countries that do not concern us is long gone. It is time to get back to being a country that people not only fear, but respect. Right now, they don't fear us. This is a great example of that. We certainly have no respect from anybody anymore. You can thank your president for that. It's time to move forward and make the U.S. what it should be, a nation that is free, that believes in the Constitution, that practices liberty and freedom, and practices that around the world. I have no idea what that is. That's it for tonight, folks. We will talk to you tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. We'll be right back here with Dale the Truth. And don't forget Thursday night, the TNT show. Mr. Martin, thank you so much.
All right, sir.
All right. Take care, sir. And that's it. That's a wrap. You too. That's a wrap. We will see you soon, folks. Have a great night. Thanks for listening.